Hi, everyone. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. We're back in the studio today with a live guest. There's a little bit of humor in that joke because this live guest is a return guest, but he's someone who's made a name for himself virtually, but he's also made that transition into real life. We're talking virtual farming and real life farming. Grant Hilbert is back with us. You know him from The Squad. That's where he does virtual farming videos and has done one since 2014 when he was still a student. He's now made enough money from his side jobs, you know, we'll call them off-farm jobs. It just happens to be that he's a YouTube star, to buy some farmland. We're going to find out what farming in real life is like, how it differs from what you see online, and how the two worlds collide. And also, this one is interesting, is where does he get recognized the most? We'll cover that in this episode. New shows come out each and every Tuesday here from Iowa PBS. If you have any feedback for me, send it to paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. You saw it on the screen here just a moment ago. Like, subscribe, share, tell a friend, check out some of our past episodes. Lots to get into there if you have any interest in agriculture. That's what we do. Now, let's get to Grant. You're a big deal on YouTube, yes, right? Okay, that's a fair question, right?
Yeah.
You're no Mr. Beast.
All retrospective, yeah.
You're no Mr. Beast, but you're pretty darn close.
Yeah, actually, okay. Well, not to cut you off, but Mr. Beast, in 2017, I was on a call with him for like 4 or 5 hours, and we were at the same subscriber count in 2017, and now he's at like, what, over 100 million or something like that.
Well, what are you at right now?
Like 1.5 million.
You're not that far off. I mean, in the scheme of the internet, let's face it, you're close.
True. But Mr. Beast is, I mean, he's up here. I'm down here.
Okay. Fair enough. When you come into a TV studio, do you sit and go, oh, they overdo it. I can do it with much less.
No. You guys, it's whole different. YouTube's like you're supposed to, you know, it's all homemade stuff. That's how YouTube's always been.
I wrote down the notes the last time we talked, and I wrote down three things. One of them was you started doing this in 2014, mm-hmm. right, on The Squad?
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school, yep.
And given, and I asked you that question before, I'll ask you it again. How different is the internet of 2014 to 2024 in 10 years?
It's changed. Like YouTube changes a lot. Like every 2 years, there's some new thumbnail or title, the way you're doing it and stuff. So that's changed. But I'm surprised how consistent YouTube's been, like how you've been able to just grow a channel and stay with it. Most people thought, okay, this is a 1-2 year deal and stuff, but it's actually turned into most people like a business where it's like, okay, I expect these cash flows this month, I'm gonna bring in this income, and it's been pretty steady. So I'm surprised by that, but YouTube's always changing every year and two.
I didn't look at your LinkedIn. Are you still what do you list as your main occupation now?
Not farmer. I wish it was farmer. I wish it was only farmer. YouTube, and then I started a software company in 2020 when I started farming. Created a mobile game called American Farming, which was hardest thing I've ever probably built or done because I'm not a software dev, and somehow I ended up managing for software devs for that. But yeah, so we launched that game in November 2023, and so that with YouTube, I'd say are my main things, and farming.
But that doesn't make you said dev, and I believe you mean developer.
Yeah.
So you're not a developer on the internet?
No.
You're not an internet? Are you an internet, I don't even want to say internet celebrity, internet personality, YouTube host, media mogul? I mean, seriously, what is your title?
Probably best way to put it is like entrepreneur, I guess. Entrepreneur, even though I sometimes hate that title, but it's you know, YouTube, and then you're trying to create businesses off YouTube and stuff like that, trying to grow wealth that way. So probably entrepreneur.
Virtual farming is what started all of this and allowed this opportunity.
Yep.
You shed the name virtual for farmer. How did that happen?
I don't know. I always wanted to farm when I was younger. And it was like, how do you start farming? And in my head, I was kind of like, okay, well, I don't, some people start from scratch, like go into it with no capital. But my idea was to gain capital throughout life, whether it be, you know, when I'm 40, 50, 60 years old, have some capital base to then start farming. You could buy 100 acres, 80 acres, and then start farming that way and stuff. And so I got kind of lucky during high school and college, and YouTube started taking off a little bit and gave me the opportunity to be able to start farming at a younger age than I expected to. So,
but I think you're very similar to a lot of people who are getting into farming that are your age and of the new farmer generation. It is that exact same blueprint. Go have an off-farm job.
Yes.
Hope to accrue some money. Maybe rent some land. Maybe buy if it presents itself and get into it that way.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I shouldn't say impossible, but it's almost impossible. I mean, you know, it's almost impossible to start farming without outside income. And outside income just makes it so much easier to get started farming. It's kind of interesting that everybody loves farming that much that they're willing to, you know, go, you know, have that outside income to buy it. It's like, you know, are you going to go make a bunch of outside income just to buy a bunch of gold and leverage a bunch of gold or something like that? Not many people, you know, take that much risk on something like that. So it's just interesting to see that in the farming world.
You bought your first piece of land when?
2020. November 2020.
So your first crop was 21.
21, yep. So I've had three crops since, yep.
I guess in the quick 3 years, what has been the biggest change?
For me personally, or what like I've seen in the farming industry?
I think you personally first.
The biggest thing is like you have all these thoughts going into farming of how it's going to play out and stuff like that. And you learn so much by actually being able to do it. There's just nothing that can, you know, I play farming.
I was going to say, darn it.
There's nothing that can simulate farming. Yeah. Nothing like it. You know, like I walk into it. Honestly, young guy, think, okay, yeah, I know how to do all this. Boy, what population do I run on my planter? How do I set that and stuff? It's like you're going into plant, and you're like, oh, shoot, I probably should have thought of that. So you're calling your neighbors and stuff, and you're learning all these things, you know, physically actually doing it, setting a combine, setting a planter, all that stuff. Biggest thing for me, I would say, is, you know, when you buy a $500,000 piece of farmland or $750,000 piece of farmland, or when you buy a $500,000 investment in real life, you know a lot about that investment. You understand that really well. Most investors do. When you buy a farm and you've never farmed before, you have no idea how this side hill is going to yield or this flat's going to yield or how this is going to drain. And so really the past 3 years has allowed me to like understand what farms are good farms, what are bad and stuff, and what mistakes I've made and stuff. Because it would have been nice to maybe rent some ground for the 5 years before going and buying it and understanding how certain farms farm.
Was that your plan, was to rent first?
No.
It was just whatever came open first?
It was just whatever came open in 2020, yeah. Yeah, whatever came open in 2020. And, you know, I was, when I first bought it, I was looking more for the discount buy. You know, like a lot of good farmers, they'll only buy high quality ground. I was looking for the discount buy, the farm that I thought made sense.
And it didn't matter where it was.
And it didn't matter where it was, yeah, yeah.
Because you're not in your backyard.
No, but, and I haven't told you this, but I'm actually, some of the ground I bought in 2020, I'm actually selling all, so three different farms and buying in my backyard. So kind of close to home, close to where I grew up. Yep, so more central in central Iowa. It's about 30 minutes away from where I grew up.
And not that, hour and a half?
Yeah, yeah.
What it was before. Yeah, so exactly. How of it, I mean, that's a challenge in itself to farm. But you're not alone in those that live somewhere and farm somewhere else. It just creates its own set of challenges.
Exactly. And I'm like, well, why do I have this challenge when I could just transport the farm and, you know, be kind of closer to home? So that's kind of my goal, at least.
But in all honesty, the land around your backyard is really expensive. It's scored well.
Yes.
It's great dirt. Not that the stuff that you're leaving is not, but it's totally different, but it's also very high priced. You're in an area that is expanding and the city wants it just as much as the farmers around it want it to.
Exactly. That's the tough part. That's why you can't be 5 minutes from your backyard. You know, you got to be 30 minutes from your backyard and stuff. But boy, some of the lower quality stuff, if you get rain, I've started realizing, will produce just as good as the higher quality stuff. But I haven't been through a really hardcore drought where we've had, you know, 130, 120 bushel corn or anything like that on that lower quality stuff. So that'll be interesting. But yeah.
I'll ask you, you said something about the real land. Did anything, it's like Hollywood, did anything that happened in real life inspire your online virtual life in a storyline that you came up with on Virtual Farming on the Squad?
There's a lot of stuff where we do a lot of role play series where we'll have a truck dealership and we come in to buy trucks as farmers, or we, do NASCAR racing or something like that in the game Farming Simulator. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of stuff in that game. Probably the biggest thing is we, we'll role play the 1980s, like, you know, run 80s equipment, 80s trucks, stuff like that. But when you go to plant a crop or something like that, there's a lot of stuff I learned in farming, like, okay, let's get out, check the planter. Okay, are we 6 inches apart on seeds? Yes, we are. And I'll role play that aspect in the videos. And a lot of the viewers and stuff like that. So there's little aspects I took from farming and incorporated in the videos.
Which one of those two jobs is funner? Work? It's the opposite.
Yes.
Which one's more fun? Which one's more work?
YouTube is by far work. Farming is fun. It's an addiction. YouTube is the thing. It's like, oh boy, I got to record two videos a day. And it's so ironic because it's playing a video game. That's all it is. But we're more, you know, making a movie, I would say, than playing a video game. It's like you have a whole storyline written out.
In a way, you still have the day job.
Yes. Yeah,
the virtual is still the day job, and you are still... this is not meant as an insult.
No.
Are you considered a hobby farmer?
Oh, yes.
Because your primary income doesn't come from
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I call it weekend warrior. I just farm on the weekends. That's all it is. Saturday, Sunday, I'm farming. Unless you got to get a crop planted on Wednesday or something like that.
Has weather created some challenges for you in managing the two?
It has, but I mean, with YouTube, you're your own boss. You can set your own recording schedule. You can do whatever. So if I really got to go out on a Wednesday, Thursday, harvest corn or plant and stuff, I will. But I try and get all work done on Saturday and Sundays. I know some people don't work on Sundays, but...
You're juggling what you have to.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you have the ability to store on site, you can do it on a Sunday. You can harvest on a Sunday.
Which I don't. I've been taking everything to the co-op. So it's really, you got like that 7 a.m. window on Saturday, and sometimes those guys like to get out there early. So 5 p.m. on Saturday night, they're closing.
Yeah. Let's go back to the dirt farming for a minute. When you took over that piece of land, I remember following along on your progress. It was fence lines needed work. There were rock that needed to be bare. There were tile that needed to be done.
Yeah.
In the sense of it was harder or it was different than what you'd simulated. Was that what you were talking about, or just all of the back to the planning spacer was the biggest challenge?
That was
or
tough.
Adjustment,
like,
I should say.
Like, I bought a farm, it was the last farm I bought that was really wet, sat really wet, soil's really heavy. You know, the CSR2 index was like 75 across that soil, so pretty good soil. But CSR2 index it assumes that ground is artificially drained if it needs artificial drainage. And so I'm like, boy, there's no tile underneath this. Why is it yielding? Why is the CSR2 75 and it's yielding 140? 130, like that's supposed to be at least 200 bushel corn. So, you know, learn a lot during that time. It's like, boy, this needs a lot of tile in it. So like fall of 2022, we went and pattern tiled real close on 30 foot spacing on that piece. And it was, that was probably the best moment I've ever had farming, was having a horrible crop in 2022, like 130 bushel corn across that piece. And then it went 230 across that piece. And it's not amazing, but it's like, boy, that just felt really good being able to fix a farm and get it producing decently.
Your farming neighbors, your old farming neighbors, did they know who you were when you bought the land? Did it quickly spread?
Yeah, kind of. I don't hear like any of the like neighborhood talk too much, stuff like that. But sometimes people know, like, hey, you're the YouTube kid, you know, YouTube kid that's buying some farmland, stuff like that. Some farmers have no idea and stuff. So it's always tough. Like, sometimes a random farmer will come up to me, come to my shed when I'm working on something, a local, and talk to me, and I don't think they knew who I am. And then an hour later, they're like, oh, how's your dad doing? Or how's the 8110 doing? And it's like, oh, you watched the YouTube channel. and stuff. So it's always tough to gauge what people know, what people don't. And
it's very, that's very interesting you say that, because there's a sign over here to your left in the room here that used to hang at the cattleman's quarters at the Iowa State Fair. And Mark Pearson used to bring in a different analyst a couple of days a week during the fair. And he would host a little, you know, market analysis segment live in the cattle producer's barn. And my boss now, the senior producer on the show, would go, and he's like, oh, nobody seems to be listening. But he could tell that nobody was leaving. And they were just quietly, oh, I'm in my book, I'm writing, and oh, I'm fake working. And they were listening. So Okay. Just when it doesn't appear that someone is knowing or paying attention to who you are, they are.
Gotcha. I mean,
you have to think of, they don't want you to know they know who you are.
Yeah. Sometimes. It's always weird. I guess you're playing mind games, even though I hate that stuff.
Yeah,
but.
Okay, let's go to the physical. Okay, you talk about the physical farming. You get the land in, or you get the crop in, you work on it in the off season. How's the marketing side gone for you of your grain?
Marketing side has been good. I'll say it's been average. It's been like, I didn't hit the highs in 2021, 2022. Actually, I sold some good corn. It's just I didn't have good yields in 2022. And then 2023 didn't hit the lows. Had some good sales in the summer when there was a little scare, but didn't hit the highs or anything like that. It's been pretty average. I do cash sales. I don't do anything crazy. So I listen to market for a lot of my information. A lot of guys on Twitter, even though you probably shouldn't, just, you know, kind of always figuring out things like that. And then, Standard Grain Joe, who might be technically one of your competitors, but he's really good. Watch a lot of his content too.
Do you feel that the reason you've been apprehensive to jump into those forward contractings or hedging this or putting this or calling, it's just a little bit of fear or not knowledge, or what's holding you back?
Yeah, it's probably that I haven't taken it seriously enough with my 250 acres to really dive into it more. I probably spent more time on other businesses, and I'm like, well, let's just be average for now on this 250. Don't do anything complex. Sometimes I think of it like the bell curve, where it's like, you know, you got the really complex people who are probably getting the same returns as somebody doing something pretty standard too. But it's definitely something I know I need to learn. Because eventually, once you get bigger and bigger, it's going to pay a lot more returns to know that stuff.
Do you have any old crop left?
I don't. Sell everything going. Usually, I'm 70-80% sold going into harvest. Okay. So that paid off really good this year. 2021 didn't pay off as good.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you've watched it go down and go, well, yeah, I guess I'm still $1.50, maybe $2 ahead.
Exactly. Yeah.
But in those other years, you did miss an opportunity, is what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Okay. Exactly. I'm pretty standard. I stay the same on most years. I was a little more aggressive this year.
We've talked about land, equipment. How did that all come together? How is working on machinery, first identifying it, then working on it and keeping it in the field moving?
Yeah. Well, I would say in 2021, when I was on this podcast, it was more me. But my brother, Spencer, he's 2 years younger than me. He's kind of followed the same path. He started a YouTube channel and does farming similar, and bought 50 acres actually last spring. And he's way more of a mechanic than me. So honestly, anything that has a really complex issue, he's the first one there working on it. And then I'm kind of his handy helper. And that works out really good that he's... In my opinion, a master mechanic. In other people's opinion, he's just a normal farmer. But that's, you know, I'm not too good on the mechanic side.
But you're not paired together on everything. Just on some of his stuff, you're helping him.
Yeah. Some of his stuff, like we share equipment, and then you know, our equipment will run on his ground and my ground. I own a majority of the equipment. He just owns a excavator and a 4020, best tractor ever built.
It's all part of the operation. I mean, it's all you need to have help on all of this. When you thought about being a farmer, whether it was 5 years ago, 20 years ago, are you in the place where you thought you would be when you were a farmer?
No. I thought I would be, like I said, I thought I'd be 40, 50, kind of have a family, starting this little hobby farm, and maybe trying to grow it from there. kind of once I had a little more capital. That's always how I kind of envisioned it. I always knew I wanted to start farming, but I was pretty safe and, and risk averse when it comes to jumping into it.
When you do you consider your virtual platform an opportunity to educate maybe the non-farmer on what farming is? Did you ever think of it that way when you started the simulator?
On simulation, not really. On the real life stuff, though, I mean, we get people from all over watching that, and I think that helps educate what's going on. I don't dive too deep into like the numbers, how much you're making. My brother Spencer, he has a separate YouTube channel. He goes into everything. He showed net acre profit this year. He actually lost money this year, showed how much he lost. And
this is his own stuff.
His own stuff. So I have a channel called Grant Hilbert. He has a channel called Spencer Hilbert. He started up like a year ago, and he has a video that got like 2.5 million views on there. And it's, you're getting people from all over in Europe, all over the world, asking a bunch of questions about it. And boy, you can really see what the average consumer thinks of the average farmer there. You know, like I think when he first bought that farm, there's some CRP that expired, and so he had to burn it off. And there's a bunch of comments from people in Europe like, boy, you'd be behind jail. You'd be behind bars in jail if you were in Europe doing that stuff. And so it really gives a good view of what kind of the world thinks of the U.S. farmer. And it's both positive, and you obviously have negative comments too.
What do you do with comments that come in?
I don't respond to them too much. Actually, some on the farming side, on the Farming Real Life channel, I respond to some of them. On the gaming side, I don't respond to too many of them. But on the farming side, I do. And I don't, you know, take quick shots back at them. I try and stay of if the commenter was right across the table from me and try and have a respectful conversation about them so we can both learn and stuff there. So I never get mad at any comments.
Go back to your real life channel. Do you get do you see it as an opportunity to have debates if they are sitting across the table from you, but do you take that opportunity to tell the German, no, this is how we do it in this country and this is why?
Yeah. No, I think that yes. Yeah, I think so, like on my real life channel, I get a lot more, you know, 30, 40, 50-year-olds that are pretty educated versus, you know, a younger audience on the squad channel. So you get a lot more smarter comments across the channel. And so you can actually have those conversations about commodity prices or what farmland prices are going to do or what or should the government be in farming? Should the government not be in farming? It's really interesting to have those conversations.
How close do you pay attention to the global issues and the U.S. issues and how they relate to you?
I try and read, learn, listen to them all. I mean, I watch Market to Market every Friday night. That's how, you know, I'll watch Market to Market and stuff and try and pay attention to those. I'm not an expert at all on any of it, though. Just more learning.
Well, then I guess I'll ask, if you've been watching the show, then you've seen the stories we've been doing about the European farmer protests.
Yes.
How much did you know about them before? I know we weren't the first to report them, but did you know much about the European farmer and the issues and challenges they face?
I didn't. I'd see a little bit of stuff on Twitter, and then I'd see the stuff on Market to Market. I didn't know much. I actually had a buddy who came over from the Netherlands knowing how bad it was going to be and came over to the U.S. in central Iowa, started a dairy farm. So that kind of gave me a little background even previously before it got bad. But your guys' stuff helps a ton.
Okay. Asking your friends, I've been thinking about this question, figure out when this, I think, seems the best time to ask this. Where are you most well known? Like if you walk down the street in Des Moines or the Iowa State Fair, Agritechnica, Commodity Classic, who stops you and fanboys you the most?
Definitely Farm Progress Show. Like a lot of my audience, so like on the gaming side, it's a younger audience. On the real life farming side, it's an older audience. So you get the mix of both. You get the young kids who will chase you down, the squad, hey man, can I get a picture of the squad? And then you'll get, you know, the older audience and stuff who will just want to have a good conversation with you. So definitely Farm Progress Show, any ag event like auctions or stuff like that. But if you go Ankeny, Iowa, walk into, you know, a restaurant, nobody will stop you, really.
So. Only if they went to high school with you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And even then,
exactly.
The parent will go, is that Grant? Was that our friend's son? You know, I do that all the time now.
Exactly. One of the weird things that happens is, like, I'll go buy some ag machinery on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they'll know the squad or Grant Hilbert. And they'll be like, oh, my next door neighbor kid, I think, watches you. So there's been like four times I bought a piece of equipment and they'll line up, you know, a younger kid who's a fan to be there. And I always think it's always the, when I'm buying a piece of equipment that, you know, you get those connections. So, yeah.
But what about, okay, so Farm Progress Show, obviously. I think when we were communicating to set this up, you were going on a show. You were going out, I don't know if you were going to Vegas or where it was. You were on some show. I mean, are you traveling to a lot of those shows as the squad or as Farmer Grant?
Yeah, I was heading out to Utah then, but yeah, when I go to shows, it's, you know, the squad and Farmer Grant pretty much. Yeah. It's a mix of the two. And like I said, you get the younger audience, you get the older audience in there.
But I guess, I mean, paying the bill, I mean, it's like a tax write-off, right? So you can charge it to this company, but you're filling both roles.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I really only went to a lot of those shows. Obviously, you connect with people, learn more and stuff. But at the time, we were building American Farming. And so building this game, you need to license a lot of brands in there. And so I was going to the shows to try and get brands licensed in our game. So we got Case IH, Versatile, a bunch of implement brands in there. And, you know, at the Farm Progress Show 2022, we had a booth there. And my goal was to go and talk to a bunch of brands, but it ended up being a meet and greet the whole time. I'm like, I need to escape and talk to.
I gotta do business.
I gotta do business. And it's not a bad problem to have and stuff, but that's the real reason why I try and go to a lot of those shows is trying to grow the mobile game.
Are you learning things though about farming when you go to those shows?
Yeah, yeah. Besides, I can't afford any of the equipment there, but yeah, you learn a lot.
Even when you see the price tag on something like that, you're in the used machinery business.
Yep.
I mean, that's where you're trying to find value and flip it to something else. You're exactly. Doing, I call it the American farming dream right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's 100% correct.
Do you find that the majority of young people your age and below, what's the percentage of someone that moves straight into an operation that has 10,000 acres and they're a cog in that versus how many are like you that off-farm job, starting small, starting from the bottom, here I am?
My knowledge comes from people and friends I'm with on social media, because there's not many in real life who are either jumping into the 10,000 acre farmer or starting their own that I know, like friends in real life. So a lot of it comes from social media. I'd say, boy, when I'm thinking through it, it's probably 60% mm-hmm. kind of jumping into the operation of, you know, family farm, going back to farm, vlogging the real life farming experience. And then some that are starting from scratch, renting their own land, starting maybe a hay business on the side, doing a bunch of side gigs, and starting farming.
The gig economy, that was the term a few years ago, but entrepreneur, it seems like everybody of your generation, I'm just amazed at how you find just a little bit and string it all together, and you just figure out what pops and what keeps your passion going, I would imagine. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think the internet's allowed so much to be able to run like a side gig business, kind of like what I'm doing with YouTube in the software company, be able to run that and then also be able to farm. Plus, a lot of people are working, you know, remote from home. So it makes farming so much more flexible. And I think that's just the nature of the internet coming about and present a lot more opportunities for people.
Okay, you don't have to answer this one. However, no. Have you ever been somewhere where one generation knows you and the older generation might be tagging along and like, who in the heck is this?
Yes.
And they have to explain it to you. And do they look at you kind of like, that ain't real?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And does that bother you?
No, it doesn't. But I'll always get the young kid who's super excited. He's like, oh, I've been watching you for 3 years. Comes like running up to you. And then you have usually like the grandpa with him at the Farm Progress Show. He's like, why is my grandkid so like excited and stuff to meet you and stuff? And then the grandkid, or actually I'm having to explain to the grandpa, like what I do, I play virtual farming games, and your grandson probably watches some of that.
Yeah, when you have to say, I hang out with your 14-year-old online, you have to quickly say what it is you're doing.
Yeah, it's an explanation for sure.
Yeah, I have a 14-year-old. That's the only reason I use that number, not picking on anything. But, I mean, he's a guy that my kid is one who knows who these YouTube stars are. He's maybe past some of that now in other things. So has that generation, those people that maybe were with you in 2014, have they stuck with you? Watched you in the beginning?
That's interesting because when I talk to people in real life, a lot of them are, oh, I watched you in 2014, 2015, 2016. I moved on. And then I started watching the real life content because I've gotten older. And so I watch the real life content now. So you kind of got like an age group for everything. It's like a lot of kids started watching me on the squad and then they only watch the real life content now. And then I have some of the, some younger viewers that only watch the squad and they don't know I have a farm in real life. And they're like, oh, you actually have a tractor in real life that you drive and stuff? That's pretty cool and stuff. And they don't realize, I farm in real life.
Analytic-wise, where are your viewers coming from, majority? Are they U.S.-based?
Yeah, let's see. It'd be 70, 75% U.S.-based.
Okay.
I'm going to say 8%, 10% Canada. And then mixtures – Australia is actually a big one. And then mixtures of other countries.
And of those U.S. viewers, are they mostly from farm states? Where farming is a little more around them.
Well, yeah. Texas and California are always the biggest no matter what. But Iowa, I think, is our third or fourth most watched state. So, and we have a lot of, like, when I'm playing Farm Sim, we always play maps from Iowa. I just love Iowa and stuff. And so I'll call it 1980s roleplay on Tehinton County or Madison County map or something like that.
You remember I'm from Buchanan County. I was really impressed with that, Grant. I have to admit. Have you used Buchanan County on a sim?
I haven't. So I built a mobile game, though, and we used – I probably shouldn't say what county, but we used a central Iowa county for the terrain. Like, built this thing out of the terrain of a central Iowa county and had real life farms. But I know a lot of people that there's like a Carroll County map in Farm Sim. I don't think there's a Buchanan County map. I have a map creator working on creating a map for kind of where some of my farmland is too.
Yeah.
Eventually there will be probably.
That's fine. When you said that, I'm curious.
And the funny thing is in Farm Sim, the best maps are the ones that are hilly, have a bunch, half trees, half farmland. You don't want the flat Story County where it's a flat 160, flat 80. It gets super boring. So Buchanan has some rolling ground. That'd
we
be
do.
Good.
Yeah, there's a little bit. Not much like I think of even just south of Des Moines when you get into on your way to Leon. We had family in Jasper County, and Jasper has some good hills. And then you'd go south, and that's where we had family. And so I would just remember, like, this is nothing like we have here. And then northeast Iowa, even farther northeast, has way more hills. And I always think, how's the school bus ever go up that hill? Now as a parent, you get worried about the school bus traveling down the road, not the adventure that the bus might have going up and down that hill on ice.
Yeah, exactly. Northeast Iowa, that's where actually a majority of the Farm Sim maps are from. That's why everybody loves playing Northeast Iowa, actually, now that you say it.
Oh, that's funny. You have a good sense of virtual in real life. What's next?
That's a good question. I don't know. For me personally, I just launched the mobile game. So I'm not – like that was 3 years, growing gray hairs on the side of working like crazy. So now it's kind of a time where it's like, okay, reflect, figure out what you want to do next. So I don't know.
Do you see yourself leaning more into real-life farming?
If the opportunity is there, right? So got to be able to have farm ground for rent, which is something I'm always working on. Always don't do the best job on, but working on increasing that. And then purchasing farm ground, depends on how much capital you have and stuff. So I'd like to get into more of the real life farming side, but I also realize that maybe some of the outside paths can almost expand the farm faster than actually doing the real life stuff and spending a majority of your time on the real life farming, even though I have so much passion and love. It's a struggle. It's like a trade-off. I love the real life farming so much.
What was that moment when you were on that farm for the first time, when it was yours and your equipment. Yeah. I mean, I've watched your smile. I can tell you are the kid in the candy store. But what was that moment that you reflect and go, holy crud, I actually made this happen?
I think it was the day I bought my first farm. I was out there with the camera, and I filmed the YouTube video of totally like buying my first farm. And I mean, that was probably one of the best. That was a cool day. That was a cool day, to say the least. And then you know, in the winter, you always think back a lot about like, oh boy, I can't believe I'm farming, even though it's not many acres, like 200 acres, 250 acres. That I never would have imagined it when I was a kid. So I think that first day I bought that farm was probably the best moment.
And the moment that maybe wasn't as good, but I think that you exhibit when I see it show up, is when something breaks, you show it. When there's a breakdown or something doesn't go your way, you're there to admit, eh, this didn't work, or this wasn't my plan.
Yeah. We don't cut out any parts that's like a bad accident or something, or I screwed up. I try and show everything. Like, there was an embarrassing moment. I don't know. Maybe you didn't see it this fall. I was hauling two wagons up a steep hill, like 60,000 pounds behind me. I get going. We haven't hauled this much weight up a hill before, and I start power hopping bad, and I'm going too fast. I'm trying downshift. The tractor's literally jumping 2 foot in the air. The hitch breaks on it. It was stupid. It was something you shouldn't have probably been doing. The only thing that saved me is, and I thought if I stopped, I was getting yanked down back down this hill. The only thing that saved me is a safety chain that I put on. And so many people are like, oh man, you would be fired off my farm right away. But we try and show like literally everything, every mistake. If we have a bad yield, you know, we yield 80 bushel in this spot, I screwed up, I try and show it. Also try and show some of the successes, especially like when I had a bad yield, put tile in, we fixed it, we did everything right the next year. I try and always show those too.
I think that's what endears you to the public.
Yeah.
And I think the genuine side of it is important. I mean, yes. And like your brother. Showing I made money, I lost money, I gained, I lost, I subtract, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think the real, because there, you've seen it online, people will talk about other farmers and go, well, that's not a real farm. That's not a real cowgirl. That's not a real cowboy. That's not a real, but come on, you're doing it. Maybe you put a filter on.
Yeah, exactly. And I can see that, like, if you're a, you know, 10,000 acre farmer and you're fifth gen, I can see the side of maybe not going into details too much on some stuff. We're so young and getting started where we try and document everything from scratch. And it's a little easier in our, because we're such smaller acreage and we're starting from scratch, to be able to do that, I'd say, than probably a larger farmer.
And you're probably more identifiable then to people, relatable of the struggles, because again, not everybody's going to come in at that high operation that's already functioning. Most likely they're going to have to be the ones making a mistake.
Yeah.
And there's going to be several things, and it's going to be daunting and it's going to be scary.
Yeah.
If Grant can do it, that's some inspiration. I mean, do you feel that that happens?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And another point back to that thing, I think it's easier to document all the failures and successes when it's just you, you know, that large family operation. It's like the uncle doesn't want to show like any of the numbers behind the farming operation. I should say that's a really key point to that, is that when it's just you and it's your mistakes, that it's super easy to document your mistakes.
But you could easily also be that farmer that, even if it is just you, I'm not telling anybody how much I'm losing.
True.
Yeah. I got too much pride. Farmer still has a lot of pride. Yeah, you figured that out, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I've asked you what's next. So new piece of land, closer to home. Do you think anything will change in your approach and lessons that you have learned over the last 3 years?
What will change? Not too much will change. Obviously, like every year you learn stuff. I'm doing a bunch of trials, trying to learn stuff. That'll change. And with farmland, you always want to buy the perfect piece that you want, but it's like, there was one available this fall for auction, and that's the one you got to choose from, and that's the one I bought and stuff. So when you're trying to be logistical and smart about farmland, it's like, for me in my situation, I kind of just got to buy the one that comes up in the area you want to buy. But just being smarter, learning it, run a bunch of trials, that's probably all that's going to change.
Grant, I appreciate you making time for us. Good luck in 2024, and whatever happens in the field, we'll be following along.
Yeah, appreciate you for having me on again. So, thanks, Paul.
My thanks to Grant. Always good to catch up with him. And we just kept talking after the cameras were done rolling and probably should have just kept going. That would have been another good 45 minutes of questions. So if you have any guest topics for me or feedback, send it in an email to market@iowapbs.org. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.